Well, we are live.
Yes,
now.
We have
on EduTalk. This is John Johnson. I'm at the Open Education Resources 16 conference in Edinburgh. You can hear the constant hum of a delightful server sitting in this room. We've been broadcasting quite a lot of speeches and talks this morning, but now I'm hoping to grab a few voices from the floor and around about. And we're starting off with Ronald McIntyre and Anna Page from OOPS. And I failed to pronounce or get through the whole OOPS completely, Ronald. Can you give me OOPS? What does OOPS stand for?
OEPS, OOPS. You know, just imagine you're tripping over or something. It stands for Open Educational Practices Scotland. So with a very deliberate emphasis on the educational practices aspect of it.
And Anna, you're doing a session tomorrow, a workshop, or do you want to tell us a wee bit about that?
I'll be talking about the OOPS Hub that we've been creating and some of the community work and the case studies that have gone up on there and will be coming in the near future. That's going to be the focus of my talk.
Right. And Ronald, just a wee thing you said there is you're very particular about the P. The practices.
Absolutely. I think what we are interested in is around the educational practices that openness might enable. And I think the keynote this morning from Catherine Cronin was interesting around that aspect, you know, where she was talking about equity and fairness and focusing on the educational practice. And just listening in, I was actually listening virtually myself. But it was interesting, the sort of when David Carnahan, I think you're coming on later, was actually coming back and actually talking about the resources aspect. So I think that just because one talks or thinks about educational practices around openness, I mean, one mustn't ignore the educational resources. I almost feel like there's a twin face there. By focusing on the openness of an educational resource, one inevitably thinks around the practices behind its production and the practices around their use and what they enable in the world. If you start to focus on what openness enables in the world and the educational practices and the pedagogic practices and so on, one inevitably has to think about the openness of the resources that underpin that. So the reception was a little bit fuzzy from the lobby listening into Catherine's talk. But yeah, I thought that was an interesting debate this morning. It was good.
You're on the same. I'm going to say the same page. The best thing, but you know, I almost thought that Catherine was sort of addressing a tension between the two, and she actually seemed to be uncovering a few different tensions in openness. But that was an interesting one between sort of two groups, almost from an outsider's point of view of open educators. Some of them are focusing very much on this resources, and she was talking about American textbooks and things.
Yeah.
And I don't think we use textbooks much in open education in Scotland. Is there any?
There are some examples, but as you say, it's not that common. I mean, I think the UK OER program has tended to focus on discrete objects. You know, obviously, there's different traditions. There are the learning technologists and the educational technology approach, you know, which actually has quite an overlap with open software and so on. So there was quite often a focus, I think, for me, just in my limited experience in the early days, of sharing discrete educational objects using open licenses. And then there's maybe another tradition of open, which draws on the open university movements and questions of openness and social justice and so on. The US does seem to have focused on bigger bits of learning, not just the textbooks, but you know, it was the US that brought us massive open online courses, which seemed to, you know, and the course element actually, you know, bundling a whole bunch of open things together seem to actually be a bit of a step change, certainly in the political narratives. You know, suddenly people started to think a lot more about openness. simply because of some of the heat, if not light, that came from MOOCs.
Yes.
So actually, the hub, can you maybe just expand a wee bit more on the hub and who's it for?
Well, the hub is for anyone who's interested in finding out a bit more about how to do open educational practice. And, you know, OER just being one aspect of that. So the hub's actually got a collection of case studies which are being compiled of people who are already doing these things and also people who are dabbling, tentatively exploring, trying things out, perhaps not succeeding first time round. We also want case studies of where things haven't gone quite to plan. Because actually it can often show a route to actually developing better practices later on and help people avoid some of the pitfalls. So that's one of the major factors and features of the hub at the moment. It has got some community functions as well, but they're not all fully developed yet, which means it's a certain amount of limitation as to how usable that side of things is. But that's coming in due course.
Yeah, that's interesting, Anna, because it was just making me think there when you were talking about what doesn't work. When you come to a conference like this, of course people want to talk about the things that they did that do work.
Yeah.
You know, and
it's hard discussing the failures.
Absolutely.
You know, it's hard admitting to them and saying, oh, we got this wrong.
But it's generally showing you're working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that kind of leads me on to another question. I've been coming to the odd open conference thing for a number of years, and it's very much higher education and community education and all the rest of it. Can you see this ever extending into the sort of school field?
Well, I mean, Josie Fraser's a brilliant example of extending into the school field, but I don't know of many others.
I think there are challenges. Mm. I think there are challenges. I mean, I was involved in a small pilot a couple of years ago with Highland Council in Scotland, which is a sort of large geographic area with a lot of small schools. And we were using a thing called Open Science Lab, which is a series of free and openly licensed virtual science experiments and simulations within the classroom. And then we actually, Anna and I worked together with some academics, and we wrote what we realized early on was that just because these experiments were out there in the wild, people didn't know how to contextualize them for the classroom and understand how to do it. So Anna and I realized that what we needed to do was wrap something around it. So we wrapped a small OER, produced very quickly and quick and dirty, wasn't it really? wrapped it round the experiment. But, well, when I say we, actually, we got teachers and academics to write it together. But it was just a small pilot, and actually getting any further with that has actually been quite difficult, I think, because teachers, I think, and schools face a lot of challenges. It's almost like I'm too busy to save myself time in the future.
Yeah, I think that nails a really good point. It's maybe that's how teachers feel.
That's how they feel. Yes.
Obviously, but then that's how do we change that around? And I'm a teacher, and I have no idea.
Because I think, I mean, especially in the UK, where the funding environment is such that there's massive pressures on budgets and individual teachers and local authorities that manage those. So if you're sort of going in to an environment where people are under incredible pressure, and sort of saying, oh, have you tried this new thing?
Yeah, they get a new thing, I think.
Absolutely.
You stalked me at new.
So the secret is to try and find a way of embedding it in their practice.
Yeah.
And that's the hard part. It's not always easy to find that route in.
Yeah. But maybe just for teachers, a wee look at the hub would be a starting point to get an idea that people in higher and further education are busy too, and they've been managing to make some inroads into this.
Because I think openness is about transitions. It's about those in-between spaces, you know, and helping with that. I mean, what we're finding in Open Educational Practice Scotland is that lots of people people in the voluntary or third sector, whatever you want to call it, who have a public-facing role. You know, they want to raise awareness about something or communicate or are engaged in behaviour change. They're interested in the role that Free and Open has in how they deliver public value.
Mm-hmm.
Partly because the expectations around them delivering public value remain, but funding is constrained. But partly because the client groups that they're engaged with are also expecting things to be freely and openly available for them. So there's a shift on, you know, they're a bit getting pressed from both sides, and from that pressure is coming an engagement in Free and Open. It's not something that we expected when we started.
No, it's just a practical rather than theoretical end.
Absolutely.
It's maybe nice to see as well.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's a lesson for HE there, and colleges and so on, is around. It's the conceptualization of how an organization creates and manages the ways it creates public value.
Mm-hmm. So, and from schools, local authorities, that's really important, I think, and it's part of their duty, I think, to the population. Whereabouts is the hub online?
It's www.oeps.ac.uk.
Right, a nice, easy one to remember. We'll put that in the show notes. Can I just say, Ronald and Anna, thanks very much for coming on and putting up with my questions and the server noise. And
I'm beginning to enjoy the server noise.
If you're listening live, we'll probably be back in a couple of minutes with another couple of guests. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you.